Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 Flash production.
However and whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show, live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, and on the Take It Easy Comical Sports YouTube channel. Welcome in, everybody. Hope y'all are having an amazing, fantabulous day, however and whenever it is you are listening. It is good to be back. I miss being on here. It feels good to be back. We got some day baseball. We got NBA play-ins. We got NHL playoffs. Maybe Douchey Hockey Guy will wander on over to the Take It Easy radio show instead of a podcast exclusive, because it's been an interesting few days in the first round of the NHL playoffs, where we've got now tonight Game 3 between the Capitals and Bruins. That's been such a fun series. Game 2 between the Predators and Hurricanes. And the North region, presented by Scotiabank, finally kicks off with the Jets and Oilers. And then, of course, there's the awesome battle for Florida, Panthers and Lightning. If you have not been watching Nikita Kucherov and Andrés Vasilevskiy and the battle between the goaltenders in Florida and which one's going to mess up for the Panthers, and Keith Yandel being called for his benching, if you haven't been paying up with playoff hockey, I'm sorry, you are missing out. But if you don't like hockey, maybe you aren't missing out. I didn't watch a lick of regular season hockey, barely watched a lick of regular season basketball, and now I'm getting deep into that postseason fever, baby. The next 2 months are going to be a lot of live sports, and I am here for it. We need to start coming up with some creative segments. So if I crowdsource this to the few people listening on YouTube and on the Take It Easy radio show on Open Talk, we can crowdsource some of these ideas for y'all and see if you got any interesting, fun ideas for how we can improve those Take It Easy podcasts. And we got a lot of live sports, so instead of just reading off scores and highlights and things like that, what are the other ways that we can get into this game of following the craziness of sports right now? So with that being said, we've got a fun show planned for you today. Of course, we're going to talk Lakers and Warriors. We're going to talk about the story in the NFL with COVID and Raquel Armstead that I was reading about yesterday that I wanted to dip into at some point here. We'll get around to that later on in the show today, as well as talking about this interesting story going on in the MLB, which is my San Diego Padres are playing this afternoon against the Colorado Rockies. So, of course, we're going to probably do our talk show baseball show at some point here. Maybe the back, like, 5 to 10 minutes, we'll talk Padres a little bit, because my San Diego Padres. For those who aren't watching on YouTube, I got my Fernando Tatis jersey going. I am feeling myself today in the 5 straight, and I have not watched very many of them because it was against the Cardinals and the Rockies. So no Fernando Tatis Jr. I thought they had a chance to totally fall off. They now have one of the best records in the National League, if not the best record in the National League, because I haven't checked the standings in the last couple days. But no Tatis, no Eric Hosmer, no Will Myers, no Jorge Mateo, no Jerkson Profar. 5 of their best hitters gone, and the San Diego Padres did not skip a beat. 5 in a row, baby. So I'm feeling myself today. as they get ready to take on them Colorado Rockies one more time here today. So where I want to begin here, as I mentioned, baseball, is by laughing at Tony La Russa, because this is like one of the most funniest stories in the history of sports. Like, as long as I've been covering sports, this Tony La Russa story with the Cardinals is one of, or sorry, Tony La Russa story with the White Sox is genuinely one of the funniest things that I have seen in such a long time. It might be like up there as like one of the funniest things I've ever seen in baseball, because we knew, it's like seeing a car crash incoming and then the car crash happens and everyone's surprised that the car crash has just happened when the car is driving on the wrong side of the road, and then you see another car coming and then you're surprised that there's a car crash, because of course Tony La Russa is going to be old boomer guy. We knew when he hired him that this was going to be a problem, because Tony La Russa is a baseball traditionalist. He is a hard-nosed subscriber, not only to just the rules of the game, which is a problem for society in and of itself and where Tony La Russa's identity politics probably align, but also at the same time, you've got a lot of spirit and flavor with the Chicago White Sox, as like media likes to portray it, which is just a way of saying you've got some Black and Latin guys on the Chicago White Sox, and the Chicago White Sox are a young team. So of course, these guys, as Lance Lynn, surprisingly, and we'll get to that in a second, that makes this story just infinitely more funny about Lance Lynn being the voice of reason in this Tony La Russa White Sox debacle. But it's amazingly funny because we're looking at a scenario where Tony La Russa is coming into a situation where we know he's old fuddy guy with a bunch of Latin players. We know this is a problem. We know this is a potential reality. And still, we're like, okay, most people didn't agree with the move to bring in Tony La Russa, but we were just going to go with it. And so now Yermán Merced, he is the DH/outfielder for the Chicago White Sox. He might win Rookie of the Year. He's absolutely amazing. He started off the season hitting like 600 and had a 2,000 OPS through like four games. It was the highest I've ever seen an OPS before. And Yermán Merced ended up drilling a 3-0 pitch in a 10-run game out of the ballpark. And this is the exact same thing we did with Tatis last year, for those who don't remember. Fernando Tatis Jr. hit a 3-0 grand slam off the Texas Rangers when they were already in the lead, and that got Fernando Tatis Jr. MLB The Show cover, and it got him a $340 million contract. Like, Fernando Tatis entered the scene for a lot of people in the mainstream. I say that as I wear, and I turn around for the YouTube, his Fernando Tatis 23 jersey for my San Diego Padres. Like, he entered the national conscience because he pimped a bat flip in the playoffs, and he hit a grand slam on 3-0 and upset some old white guys. And so Yermán Merced is of the same Fernando Tatis caliber. One, he's Latin. Two, he speaks Spanish, I believe. And three, he's a young guy with flavor and flair, and people like him. And of course, Tony La Russa ends up coming out and being like, this was unacceptable, and there will be consequences within our family, and Yermán will apologize and all that stuff. And everyone freaked out about the unwritten rules, and old white people, even though the unwritten rules of baseball have basically faded to the background, because with generations changing, you're seeing the old school rules of baseball dissipate. Even 15 years ago, you were starting to see this, because we were having the exact same conversation when I was like 7 and 8 years old in Little League. You started to see those generational changes. And I'm not like pointing to my own thing as like, this is what's going on in Major League, but you had these same conversations with old white guys arguing about old traditional rules of baseball that don't make sense to a younger generation. I am a person who does not believe that is the reason why the decline of interest in baseball is such. I believe that live sports as a whole are starting to fade to the background a little bit. The homogenization of baseball is a turnoff for people who are not straight, white, and conservative. And I think a lot of that culminating is leading people who in the past might have been neutral sports fans, and baseball being the neutral sport in America, even post-football overtaking baseball is America's pastime in the 1980s, you still had people casually tuning into baseball, and you were able to have Derek Jeter become one of the most famous people in the world because he was a baseball player. Because we don't have casual sports fans as much anymore, and this is one of the first generations where people aren't interested at all in live sports, we're starting to see baseball kind of be a more niche sport. Part of that is the homogenization of the sport and the fact that they refuse to adapt. That's a very real part of it. Adapt or die is a very real thing, especially as the game changes when the semantics of the game are about the same, even as the product completely changes on the field. This is a very real situation that exists for baseball going forward. And so one of the things that Tony La Russa brings up is the fact that this generational divide still exists between his generation and the three generations that came before Fernando Tatis Jr., Yermín Merced. These old 80s, 90s Bud Selig guys, and Bud Selig guys is just to signify a time frame of Major League Baseball, but these old guys who are now pretty much aging out of the sport, because it was weird when 78-year-old Tony La Russa was called back to manage the Chicago White Sox because owner Jerry Reinsdorf, you guys probably remember him from The Last Dance. Yeah, that guy, Jerry Reinsdorf, basically went over the head of his GM and his front office and got Tony La Russa hired. And everyone's afraid of Tony La Russa, and everyone's afraid of Rick Hahn and that organization. And so one of the things that's ended up happening, for example, is that Tony La Russa didn't know that in the extra innings you didn't have to pinch run your pitcher on second base. The new extra inning rule says that at the start of every inning you put a runner on second base to start the 10th and 11th. And Tony La Russa didn't realize that the pitcher doesn't have to go pinch run. You can pinch run the guy before the pitcher. And after the game, they lose by one run. That run with the pitcher on second didn't end up scoring. And Tony La Russa is like, yeah, I didn't know about that. But that's not necessarily Tony La Russa's job. That is the bench coach's job to kind of keep that up. Or someone in the front office call down and tell Tony La Russa about that before the first pitch ever gets thrown. Like, delay, delay, delay. Tony, this is the rule. Please go do this and let Jose Abreu run on second base. But it doesn't happen. So it's pretty clear everyone's petrified of leadership in that organization. And people probably don't feel safe doing their jobs, which can lead to short-term results, but in the long term will blow up in their face, which we kind of expected, right? We kind of expected Tony La Russa would blow up in the face of the Chicago White Sox at some point. Like, that part's not super surprising. Tony La Russa ending up being old fuddy guy is not the most surprising thing in the world. Like, this is the reality of being a Chicago White Sox manager who coaches a bunch of Latin guys and black guys, because Tim Anderson – well, actually, let's go to the Tim Anderson part here. So when this all began, the Tony La Russa saga back in December, when Tony La Russa was announced as the hire of manager for the Chicago White Sox, and then a day later he gets charged with a DUI, or I'm sorry, a day before he was announcing the hire, he was charged with a DUI, his second DUI, and Tony La Russa ends up still becoming the manager of the Chicago White Sox. And it looks like just a total train wreck. Like, anytime the ownership goes over the GM and over the manager to go make a hire, or I'm sorry, over the GM and over the president of baseball ops to go make a manager hire, you're instantly setting it up for something to potentially go catastrophically wrong. It's what incompetent organizations often do. And when it's that plainly obvious, because Tony La Russa is not still qualified to be a major league manager at 78 years old, it's setting yourself up for a train wreck to happen, or in this case, a car wreck. So you see Tony La Russa get hired, and I did not even intend when I said it's like someone driving on the wrong side of the road. I did not even mean to poke fun at the fact that Tony La Russa has had two drunk driving incidents where he was asleep at the wheel in the middle of the night at his car at a stop sign. That's the second time it's happened to Tony La Russa. Once in 2011 or 12, and once now in 2020. But you already start to see that coming down. And Tim Anderson was the person that we were pointing to as like, hey, Tim Anderson is this flamboyant dude. He chucks his bat after hitting walk-off homers. He is unapologetically black in a sport that tries to scrub the blackness from the players, the limited number of black players who still play in Major League Baseball. I think the number is down to like 9%, 6%, one of those two. But Major League Baseball scrubs the blackness. I put that in air quotes, blackness. I was doing it below the camera. Let me bring it up. Blackness out of Major League Baseball players. And Tony La Russa is, again, like I said, when you are that any kind of rules and you're not willing to bend the rules in any kind of way, first of all, it tells you where you stand in terms of the political hierarchy. Because if you are that conformist to the rules, then all of a sudden that sets you up in a position where if the rules are such and you are not allowed to break them under any circumstances, it tells you where you probably fall along the political spectrum. And Tony La Russa, we wouldn't be surprised to find out that 78-year-old white Tony La Russa, face of baseball, happens to lean to the right of the political spectrum, which in this point in America, the strictness of the rules often means excluding black and Latin players because the sport is increasingly homogenized and the rules in America were created overwhelmingly by white people to maintain white power and white privilege. In the case of baseball, similar such things exist. The unwritten rules of baseball it's not that they in themselves, it's the way that they are enforced, because when a white guy does something like that, people let it slide. There's not a lot of conversation around it, but it is when the black and the Latin players do it in the echo chamber of media, which, again, I think we do a poor job of doing that. It's only when it's a Tatis and when it's a Yermín Merced that we're talking about this. When guys fight, think about hockey for a second. Hockey, the sport that's almost entirely white. If you had black dudes fighting white dudes in hockey, they would start banning hockey. It's all about the enforcement of the legislation. If you had hockey where the sport was, say, 30 to 40% black, doesn't even have to be like the NFL and NBA where it's a black supermajority. If you start having black dudes fighting white dudes in hockey, you are going to see hockey ban fighting. How do we know this? The NBA did the exact same thing after the Malice at the Palace, when Ron Artest, Steven Jackson, Jamal Tinsley started punching the customers, the white customers, who threw beer at the black players. And the NBA banned fighting and implemented a dress code and did all of these homogenizing things to conform to the white ideals of the league to appeal to white customers. Baseball will do the exact same thing with this unwritten rules game, because only when it's a Latin player do a bunch of old white people start talking about unwritten rules of the game. And that was exactly what people thought was going to be the case with Tim Anderson, was that Tim Anderson, a black guy who with flair and flamboyance and unapologetically black in a league that tries to scrub blackness, pun intended, like air quotes, scrub the personality and blackness off of black players, when Tim Anderson is unapologetically black and already talks about, hey, I feel like we're going to kind of bump heads with Tony La Russa, which he did in an interview after La Russa was hired, I want to say for Sports Illustrated, but I'm not 100% sure, and he's the captain of that locker room, you already start to see the lines divide. But I do have to say, the one thing that was shocking more than it being Yermín Merced, another flashy dude with personality on the Chicago White Sox, is that now Lance Lynn, old-ass Lance Lynn, is coming in and saying the unwritten rules of the game basically don't exist anymore. And Tony La Russa comes back, and I want to make sure I get this quote correctly, because it is Tony La Russa just unabashedly going like a generational thing instead of a race thing. But it's these two things are intertwined. So here's the full quote. So Lance Lynn last night said, quote, "There are no rules when a position player is pitching," added, "the more I play this game, the more those unwritten rules have gone away." Tony La Russa said of these remarks, quote, "Lance has a locker. I have an office. I don't agree. I have an office. I don't agree with what the player is saying. It's my way or the highway." And oh, boy. That is not the good message to send to your locker room. And Then they throw at Tim Anderson last night, throw out the pitcher, and then Tim Anderson comes up and Tim Anderson starts going after the Minnesota Twins manager who threw at Yadier Molina, and Tim Anderson's mocking the Twins a little bit, and it's all just very dumb. All of it is very, very dumb. And baseball, this is the thing. I like baseball fights, the real baseball fights, like the ones where Amir Garrett actually tries to take out the entire Pittsburgh Pirates team. Like, I love those fights. So I love baseball fights. I love basketball fights. I love hockey fights. I love football fights. I love chain snatching in football because then it leads to football fights that we can talk about. But throwing baseballs at each other is dumb. We were reminded again with the Kevin Pillar thing where his face shattered just like Giancarlo Stanton's face got shattered by a baseball coming at his face at 97 miles an hour, and he has to have, like, reconstructive cheek surgery. Like, I love those kinds of things, but unfortunately, there's a point where I kind of have to be like, of course it's wrong. I recognize it's wrong, but the fighting part of it, it's just the escalation of throwing baseballs at each other as a form of judicial power of throwing baseballs at each other. I have no problem with it. It's a problem when someone's face busts open, but I kind of go both ways on that one because, of course, it's wrong, but it's within sports. Like, football in and of itself is wrong. The sport itself is just very wrong, but it's still highly entertaining, and it's Kingpin in America. I'm not going to pretend like I'm Mr. Righteous Morals here and pretend like this is the thing I was saying with the COVID pandemic. Don't pretend like we don't play God with people's lives all the time. I'm not going to stand up and say, like, yes, this is wrong and it should be barred from the sport. Like, I'm not naive. I'm not naive about the realities of, like, this is – throwing baseballs at people is wrong, but I also recognize we play God with people's lives all the time. So playing God with people's health is kind of how sports work, right? Like, we don't have the nuanced perspective in sports, or at least don't exhibit it all the time, to actually take these things into consideration. But, hey, that's kind of the way baseball works, isn't it? And that's the way sports works, is that it's a bunch of dumb people who recognize the strange, weird rules and traditions and tribalisms that this realm presents itself in the grand scheme of American society. And, you know, sometimes we dip away from those things. But I do have to say, throwing baseballs at each other is not always going to be the worst thing in the world. But a lot of these unwritten rules are gone. Trevor Bauer did the thing when Tatis pimped a bat flip on him. He's like, yeah, that's totally cool. He hit a sky-towering home run off of me. Yeah, you should pimp your bat flip. Of course you should. It was awesome. And you don't have to throw at people. I don't understand why the Twins were throwing at him anyways. Just let the Tony La Russas of the world age out. It might take generations. It might be after Tim Anderson is gone. But you're starting to see the generational shift. I think Hillary Clinton may have stolen the quote, but it's basically the idea of just, like, it takes generations to change hearts. Like, change is going to come over a long period of time. And baseball has been going on for 15 years. You've been having the same debates of pimping bat flips, hitting homers on 3-0, and beating teams by 10 and putting position players in at pitcher. We've been having those same conversations for like 15, 20 plus years. As long as I've been alive, I can give you 15 years. I'm 20 now, but I'm, again, conscious 15 years. I can give you that the same conversations have been had, and generations are changing slowly but steadily. It takes generations to change these rules and change the ways that things go. And it takes more stars like Tatis and Yadier Molina to have people buying their jerseys and becoming the second most popular person in baseball and getting cover art for MLB The Show, because young culture is often rebellious culture, and young culture is often black culture. Black culture often resembles youth culture in America, at least in terms of what interests are. There's a great study that's been done on this in a few different places about how overwhelmingly what's cool is usually what black people deem cool, and then black culture ends up expanding to pop culture a lot of the time, or Asian culture ends up expanding to pop culture to a lesser degree, and white culture ends up becoming the thing that's, like, you know, singing Sweet Caroline at Boston Red Sox games. Like, it's White culture is a very traditional tribalist idea, and young culture is often black culture in America, and young culture is often minority culture in America. Women's culture in America often becomes popular culture very quickly, and so I think I've said culture like 18 times in the last 50 seconds, but the point to that being is that, of course, what Fernando Tatis and Yermin Merced and Tim Anderson do is cool. It's dope to rebel against authority. And the authority in this case is not Tony La Russa, but Tony La Russa is the private citizen in this equation who's enforcing the will of the law. And if that ain't a sports reflect society moment right now, I can't tell you what is at this point. The idea that you're rebelling against the private citizens who enforce things on society, some people are telling on themselves when it comes to Tony La Russa. Although Tony La Russa wasn't the breaking point for a lot of people, people are telling on themselves with this Tony La Russa story, and it's really, really funny to watch it play out. It's genuinely one of the funniest things I've seen all year. Because, of course, this is going to happen. It exposes the flaws of America. It exposes the flaws of the system. It exposes generational divides, racial divides. And we all knew it was going to happen. Maybe not exactly like this, where Lance Lynn is becoming like the Max Kellerman meme where he's wearing a dashiki. Like, it's not quite that, but, like, the idea that Lance Lynn is coming to the defense of the locker room and Tony La Russa is a totally failed experiment, because we all saw Tony La Russa was going to be a totally failed experiment for the White Sox. Not like the White Sox aren't good, but they have a lot of talent on the team. They were supposed to be good no matter who's managing the team. It's not like the Cleveland Browns a couple years ago where Freddie Kitchens can tank your entire season because he's terrible at play calling. Like, Tony La Russa's a game manager, and Rick Hahn's calling the shots, and Tony La Russa's not the old-timey manager anymore. Tony La Russa is the not necessarily the analytics manager either, but he's just kind of a figurehead at this point. And of course this is going terribly for the Chicago White. Of course Tony La Russa is now at odds with his locker room. This is what happens when you bring in a 78-year-old white guy who the owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, again, you might remember him from The Last Dance, who Jerry Reinsdorf wanted to hire because he let him get away in 1983, and 39 years later he wanted to make it right. Of course it was going to be a catastrophic failure, because those guys, like, Tony La Russa is older than most of their grandparents. He's not an authority figure for these guys. And if he is, then you're taking away all of the personality and all of the freedom to be yourself in the locker room. And when people don't have that trust and respect and feel like they can go to work and feel safe, like I feel like is going on in the White Sox front office, because everyone appears petrified of Tony La Russa and Rick Hahn and the president of baseball operations, whose name I don't know, and the owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, and afraid to express their ideas out of fear of retribution. In the long run, it is not sustainable. In the short run, you might get what you're looking for. You also might not. But in the long run, it's not sustainable. And I think after this year, Tony La Russa is probably going to get the can, or maybe after 2 years, he's probably going to get the can, because this has not worked out for the Chicago White Sox. And of course, like I said at the beginning, it's like watching Tony La Russa drunk 5 a.m., stopped at a stoplight on the wrong side of the road, and then being surprised when someone crashes into him. All right, y'all. Again, thanks to everyone stopping in on YouTube as well. Padres are 0-0 early on against my Colorado Rockies. We'll get to that towards the end of the show here today. But I want to talk about Raquel Armstead right now, and I want to talk about Lucas Niang, and I want to talk about Nate Solder, and I want to talk about these random names in football that all have one thing in common. They were all opt-outs of the 2020 season because of COVID. And this is an interesting conversation to talk about, because I saw the other day Raquel Armstead, who got COVID at the start of the year and had to sit out because he was dealing with myocarditis. And he was supposed to compete with James Robinson for the starting running back job, ended up getting cut by the Jacksonville Jaguars in OTAs. And he ended up getting picked up by the New York Giants, so he'll at least have a chance to compete in camp. And to be honest, Raquel Armstead probably wasn't someone who was going to last more than the median football career, which I believe is about 2.5 years, especially after they drafted Travis Etienne in the first round and still have the third leading rusher in football last year who nobody's paying attention to or giving any credit to. But Raquel Armstead got cut by the Jacksonville Jaguars after suffering myocarditis, and it was a reminder in the moment because everyone talked about him and Eduardo Rodriguez. We talked about Eduardo Rodriguez last year on the podcast. It was how we were introduced to our friend Bill Thompson, was because Eduardo Rodriguez had to miss all of last season with myocarditis, and then he came back this year, and he's like the number two starter on the Boston Red Sox, and he was supposed to be the number one last year. But Eduardo Rodriguez got to be welcomed back once healthy because he was still really good. And for Raquel Armstead, who had to stop playing for a few months, he had to come back to camp this year with more running backs in tow, and he couldn't really afford to miss that season. But medically, he had to miss that season just like any other injury. And that is the way that these guys who opted out of the season have to kind of be welcomed back into their organizations, is that for people who opted out of the season, like any kind of injury, there is a gap in there, especially as the rest of the world started moving on from COVID-19. We could go back like now when, like myself, I'm double vaccinated and people are double vaccinated and you can go do things again, but you could also throw it back to March when guy in a Joker, dressed in a full Joker outfit, with green hair and face paint, waving an American flag shirtless on South Beach, standing on a car, declares that COVID is over. I guess technically COVID is over at that point. And that was in spring break. It was a funny video. You can go find that of a guy in full Joker face paint and green hair, shirtless, standing on top of a car, waving an American flag, screaming, "COVID is over." Really funny video. Check it out. Or at least Google Joker flag car Miami. Spring break, COVID is over. Just punch some of those things into Google if you want to try and find that video. But you could throw back to then, and I think for a lot of these guys, I think with the information we had at the time, we didn't know how the 2020 season was going to go. And it went for the NFL without really any hiccups. Like, there were a couple of COVID stoppages in and out there, but for the most part, there were not any real hiccups with the process for the NFL. They got the whole season in on time. They only had to postpone a couple games, which could be made up over bye weeks. They just had to switch some bye weeks around. And the NFL is coming back now. And I saw an interview with Lucas Niang, I think it was for Slate, and he was talking about how he doesn't feel like the stress coming back. Like, he's going to be a rookie now for the Kansas City Chiefs, and he was one of our homies from the Take It Easy podcast when we were doing draft analysis in 2020 about how Lucas Niang is someone we think could be kind of awesome going into the NFL draft. And his contribution was pretty remarkable in two reasons. Lucas Niang, one, could have been extremely – his story, not his contribution. His story is really interesting for two reasons. One, Lucas Niang could have played in the Super Bowl at right tackle instead of Mike Remmers for the Kansas City Chiefs. And two, this was a guy who had just been drafted in the third round of 2020. So him sitting out the season is a risky proposition because a lot of third-round picks by year two are often – well, not often, but there are times where third-round picks are not on the same team that they were starting with. And so for Lucas Niang, it all of a sudden – is like, well, now it's another rookie coming into the Kansas City Chiefs. And maybe that makes it easier than for Raquel Armstead, who was coming back to the Jaguars and opted out of the season, or sorry, didn't opt out of the season, suffered from myocarditis and then had to sit the rest of the season. And when he opted out after dealing with myocarditis, opted out voluntarily, but with medical reasons to opt out. So Raquel Armstead sits out the whole season and he never gets to play for the Jaguars again because he's one of these borderline guys. And I think even if he played for the Jaguars, he probably would have been cut, but it still would have at least been an opportunity. And this is the difficult thing that we had to deal with at the time, was like, well, will these guys be welcomed back for sitting out a season with COVID? And now we're learning that most of them will be welcome back because there's not a stigma around sitting out over COVID, but the realities of the NFL don't make an exception for COVID, which of course it doesn't. The realities of business trudge on even without, with or without a disease or without any kind of impediment. These kinds of things happen all the time, and it was just interesting to see after we came back from COVID to see what that was going to end up. Yeah, wow, let's try that again. Mike Breen, Taco Bell, check out today's podcast if you want to know what that means. Fermenting itself in a disease that, you know, takes away the breath of a running back who kind of relies on that stamina for his profession. And so Raquel Armstead ends up being the guy who we forget about him having myocarditis, a new regime comes in Jacksonville, and the reality of the situation is he moves on. And pretending like this is a meritocracy is another thing that's like, I'm not going to be naive about that either. I'm not naive to the fact he's like, well, Raquel Armstead didn't earn it, and they've got too many running backs. I understand that this is not a meritocracy. Sports are the closest we can get to a meritocracy in our society because it's pretty hard. Well, Tim Tebow, sorry. I was going to say it's pretty hard to just form a relationship with someone and immediately get a job, but then I just realized Tim Tebow. Never mind. Maybe sports do reflect society a little more than I like to admit. But, oh, my gosh, that was funny. I laughed myself a little bit on that one because, oh, my goodness. I was talking about that as like, well, see, sports is the closest we get in an industry to a meritocracy. And then I just remembered the storyline that's been captivating for the last 10 days. There's literally nothing going on in the NFL, and that is Tim Tebow. And that Tim Tebow is still playing football after not playing for 9 years as a converted tight end. It's so good. There's so much humor in all of this stuff, but yeah, I think that's a funny way to close out the segment. Just let's walk away on Tim Tebow because that's a funny way to close that one out. Talking about Raquel Armstead and myocarditis and literally losing your breath, but yeah, ending on Tim Tebow is always a funny note right there. That's always a good way to get a chuckle. Just a good little Tim Tebow chuckle. All right, so let's move on to this NBA play-in game, people. I know if you're tuning in on YouTube, I kind of like tricked you into popping in to talk about this NBA play-in game. And the NBA play-in game is here, ladies and gentlemen. Boy, this is going to be interesting, isn't it? LeBron James, Stephen Curry, going to be fun, right? I don't know. I mean, so Vegas right now is kind of holding out hope that this is going to be a close game. And I look at it and I'm like, oh my goodness, this game could be like an all-time classic in terms of like how close I feel like this one's going to end up being. Vegas, here's what I'm talking about. So Vegas has the Lakers as 5.5-point favorites, but in moneyline bets, they're taking about 62% of the money for the Lakers and about 70% of the bets on the Lakers. So Lakers, Warriors odds as they change here. Let's see what FanDuel has to say about this. No, not that. I want this one. So let's see. What are people saying about the odds on this game? So at BetMGM, you have... they're not showing the money here. So Warriors are plus 190, but I want to know what people are betting right now. It doesn't say it there. Sorry, looking for more information in there. But it looks like right now they are saying that the money is overwhelmingly going towards the Lakers right now. At least that looks like what the game plan is going into this. So this is interesting because it looks like the money is still leaning towards the Lakers. I can actually pull this up on Bleacher Report. I don't know why I was going this route so much. But the Lakers are in a position where everyone expects that they'll win, right? Everyone expects that the Lakers are going to win this game, and the line keeps moving. Lakers, Lakers, Lakers. But right now, So we have 77% of the money line bets are on the Lakers. So Vegas is betting heavy Warriors, and the Lakers are at 60 minus six. The line keeps going up. They're at 64% of the bets. They want people to keep betting the Lakers. And so Vegas is leaning to the Warriors. And I see that, I'm like, oh, snap. They think we're getting a Steph Curry game, people. They think we're getting an epic Steph Curry game for the ages. And you know what? I could not be happier to hear that. If Vegas is telling me to bet the Warriors, damn it, I'm a bet with the house and let the house carry me to victory. Oh, my goodness. This makes me so damn happy. And I look around at the odds to win tonight, and everyone's saying it's going to be an over. So Vegas, or actually, yeah, Vegas is taking 71% of the bets on an under of 218. So here's what Vegas is saying right now. They're saying that they expect the Warriors will keep it within six. They're putting heavy money on Warriors to win, and they think it's going to be a high-scoring game. Like, how many points is Steph Curry going to score tonight? Like, Steph could shoot poorly and they lose and Vegas would be proven wrong, but oh my goodness, are they saying Steph could go for 40, 50, 60? Could he take 20, 25, 30 shots? Could he shoot 30 three-pointers in a game? Is that how the Warriors are going to beat the Los Angeles Lakers in a one-game play-in? Oh, the possibilities are endless, people. And oh, by the way, on the other side of this, they've got 74% of the bets on Memphis, so they think the Spurs can beat the Grizzlies. And they think that Memphis, to a lesser degree, it's only 67% of the bets right now, they're saying that the Spurs can win outright to a lesser extent. So they think that's going to be a super close game. So we're setting ourselves up for Spurs and Lakers, one game, win or go home. Oh, if that's what Vegas is telling me right now, then sign me up for Friday night, people. And then Warriors and Suns, like, Suns fans are going to be the happiest people in the world if they end up playing the Warriors instead of the Lakers in that first round. And Utah is going to be cursing if they end up playing the Lakers, although it does look like LeBron and AD both are not at full strength at this point. So I think this one's probably going to end up rolling in favor of the Lakers, but I said that about the Wizards last night, and Vegas was confident that Vegas is rolling with the Golden State Warriors, and that's going to be fun for everyone to watch. So again, games at 10 o'clock, check it out. It's going to be so much fun. Stay up late if you're on the East Coast, put those kids to bed, but then there's me sitting out here on the West Coast, the best coast, and getting games at 7 o'clock at night. So I can stay up late past my bedtime at 9 o'clock and then go watch the Lakers take on the Golden State Warriors. And we talked about this on the radio show last week and then again on the podcast on Tuesday. Like, watch this game tonight because we don't know. We're not guaranteed any more of these games. These, like, stars of a generation, the generation that's just passing by right now, like passing by LeBron, Steph, Harden, KD, Kawhi, all those guys are starting to pass right now. And so we're not guaranteed anymore from here. I expect we'll see one of them at some point here, but none of them are guaranteed from this point going forward. None of these matchups are guaranteed between the Lakers or the Clippers or the Nets. None of them are guaranteed from this point going forward. And that's a reality that we're going to have to deal with for the next 2 months. And going forward, if this transition period finally takes a hold, however long it might take, it is going to be interesting to see this transition from the old generation to the new generation take shape. And guys like LeBron and Steph might end up taking each other out. That's just part of the reality of these situations. It's going to be really, really interesting to watch it play out across the next few years, but more specifically across the next couple months, because this year is all part of that weird transition phase. So get excited for that. Get excited for that Spurs-Grizzlies game. It's all going to be really, really fun. And if you tuned in last night, you got a combined, I believe, 50 points of victories for the Boston Celtics and the Indiana Pacers. So yeah, I guess that one didn't work out so hot in your guys' favor, but still, that wasn't the worst thing in the world. Still ended up being kind of a nice little thing there, so playing games are kind of fun. It's good to have stakes back in games. Should we bring back Douchey Hockey Guy? I know we did a little bit off the top of the segment here, but we've also got a Padres game going on. Padres runner on second, one out in the second inning. Fernando Tatis just stole a base and did the splits. If you want to see that photo, follow us on Take It Easy Podcast on Instagram and Comical Sports Memes on Instagram. It'll be on one of those by the time this radio show comes to a close. And if you're checking us out on YouTube, hit that follow button for us. It's always much appreciated. And leave a thumbs up. I see the two people in here right now. Leave a thumbs up if you can hear me right now. It'd be cool to see some people give the thumbs up real quick here. Padres take strike one there. But it's going to be interesting, interesting. All right. The Padres are going on here. And like I said off the top, five straight wins is going to make you feel good about yourself. What does Douchey Hockey Guy have to say at this point? Well, Douchey Hockey Guy would definitely want to talk about the Preds and the Hurricanes tonight and what, you know, the Preds get a chance to steal a game from Carolina in the 4-1, and people didn't give them much of a chance. They're kind of like an 8 seed that kind of slipped into the playoffs, but in hockey, 8 seeds can win all the time. At least it happened twice a couple years ago. Years ago in the NHL. So 8 seeds can pull off victories all the time against 1 seeds. Maybe Nashville tries to go in and steal a game for the Carolina Hurricanes tonight. Jets are missing their star players, which, again, we're kind of trying to set up the Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid second-round game. So if the Jets would kindly oblige by that, I know they used to have Patrick Laine, but I know he got traded as Jerkson Profar Grounds won the second base for out number 2. I know they had Patrick Laine, but he got traded to somebody else. And if the Winnipeg Jets would like to oblige and allow Connor McDavid to advance to the second round, that would be very much appreciated for sure. What else does Douchey Hockey Guy have to say here? So Douchey Hockey Guy wants to talk about the Capitals and Bruins series, which has had 2 overtime games, one where the Bruins – Game 2 was probably the best one of the series. Like, Game 1 was awesome, how it ended in overtime, and one slid just slowly but steadily by Pecorine, but Game 2 was like Boston making a stand for themselves. With Brian O'Grady grounds one to first base, number 3. No runs, 1 hit by Fernando Tatis Jr. for the San Diego Padres. And the inning is over. CJ Cron hitting for the Colorado Rockies. Good to see that he's still hanging out in the MLB somewhere. Back to Douchey Hockey Guy. That second Boston game was awesome, where Boston was down 1, trying to steal a game in Washington. And if you go down 0-2, it's always difficult in hockey, but you are going back to your home ice at the very least. And so Boston ends up scoring a goal with 2.5 minutes left to force overtime, getting to overtime, and then just in a total scrum of people that I'm surprised didn't knock the net off of its thing, Taylor Hall buries one in to help Boston advance to a 1-1 series tie as the series moves on back to the Boston Garden, and we'll see them play tonight. Or maybe we won't because the game starts at 3:30, but still going to be interesting to watch for sure. Bruins, Capitals, that series has been the best for sure. I think it's probably the best one that exists right now. Like the 3-2 series are always good because they're evenly matched teams. And when they're in a strong division like that one or the Central Division presented by Discover Card, you know it's going to get infinitely interesting. Or the East Region presented by Mass Mutual, because I like the fact that I laugh. There's been a lot of laughs here today. Tim Tebow, Tony La Russa, and Yetterman Merced, and the fact that hockey sponsors their divisions. All of those things I find just funny, that these are realities that we have in sports right now, that we're just going to start naming our divisions and just have no – or sponsoring our divisions. And then we can talk about the East Region presented by Mass Mutual to talk about the shameless money grab that hockey needs to make, because hockey is losing a lot of money. And as we talked about a little bit on the podcast we did with Daily Sports Dosage, you can check that out tomorrow morning, they kind of need that money. They kind of need that money real quick. So that's going to be interesting to see. I muted the microphone there. But it's going to be interesting to see what ends up happening on the hockey side of the finances. Because, again, Connor McDavid just got the first $100 million contract in the history of hockey. So, like, hockey is 90s basketball finances right now and not necessarily going up at this point. They've kind of – they're going up. They just got a big TV deal from Turner and ESPN, and they got these big budgets going up. But hockey's not exactly, like, the most flourishing financial sport in terms of, like, the major four, which is – or major seven, eight. I don't know. Sports are weird again because, it's like – there's two national sports, basketball and football, and then everything else is kind of a niche sport. Like, baseball is a niche sport. You have hockey is a niche sport. Golf is a niche sport. Tennis, UFC, boxing, all of these things have kind of become niche sports. Everyone kind of picks and chooses their two or three that they get really into, like college football, WNBA, college basketball. Everyone picks the two or three that they get really interested in. And I know a little bit about all 12, but I know a lot about, like, baseball, basketball, football. I guess those are the three that I could probably say. I know a lot about college basketball and college football, but I just don't watch as much of it or care to follow it the way that I do. A lot of that has to do with my, like, problems with the NCAA, even though I gave them a bunch of money to go to the Final Four. But still, it's a little bit of a problem that I have with the NCAA over time and the issues that they've had with their compensation and compensatory problems and the fact that college athletes get paid 16 cents on the dollar. As Joe Musgrove almost strikes out Garrett Hampson, but he does not. And the count continues. He's already got four strikeouts. All right. TJ Cron hitting 306. Damn. Pretty good for the Colorado Rockies, but – yeah, again, it's more of a niche sport, I suppose. But the finances of hockey are interesting. As now Joe Musgrove strikes out his fifth batter of the game. All right, Joe Musgrove. Let's get it done, Joe Musgrove. Look at that. Strike three. Sit him down. There you go, Joe. So, yeah, what else is going on in the hockeyverse? Blues and Avalanche play tonight, too. I forgot about that. Avalanche should win that series pretty easily, but similar situation to Nashville. They're the one seed in the West region brought to you by Honda, and there's a really good Colorado ends up making the Stanley Cup final because they've got Nate McKinnon, who's a stud player, and they've got him on a cheap contract, and they've got like four or five All-Stars this year. So Colorado's got a good chance, but hockey's playoffs are always random. The Blues are just hanging on to the remnants of a Stanley Cup champion that probably shouldn't have been a Stanley Cup champion. They were probably one of the worst Stanley Cup champions of the last two decades, but it was still interesting to watch it happen. And, you know, a lot of the remnants of that team are still hanging out together. And they're four seed in the West region brought to you by Honda, and that's kind of where they stand right now. So good for the Blues in getting there and for – the Avalanche, they're already up 1-0. They should probably take a 2-0 lead in the series tonight. We'll see how it ends up playing out for them as Musgrove delivers and fouled off to stay alive by Nunez, who is the catcher. Nunez, who is that? Dom Nunez. I have no idea who that is, but Dom Nunez is the catcher. And was that the walk-off? Yeah, that was the walk-off from the other night from Jorge Mateo. Welcome back, Jorge Mateo. And the 0-2 on the way from Musgrove is strike three, six, count them, six strikeouts for Mr. Joe Musgrove. What a great start. Three innings, six strikeouts. Wow. What a start. He's got eight up, eight down, and now brings up Chichi Gonzalez. By the way, there was another no-hitter yesterday in baseball. I woke up the next morning. I was like, oh, no-hitter. It was like the third starter on the Tigers. Which you know your team is in a shitty place in baseball hell when you're getting no hit by the Orioles and Tigers. And that's where the Seattle Mariners are right now, getting no hit by the Mariners. Or they're getting no hit. It would be funny if they also got no hit by the Mariners, but getting no hit by the Orioles and Tigers is just a special place in baseball hell that the Seattle Mariners reside in. And ball one comes into the pitcher, Chichi Gonzalez. used to care about no-hitters, less so now, as Chi-Chi hits a drive out to center field, and that one's going to bounce off a wall. Chi-Chi has the first hit of the game. The pitcher drives a double off the wall. Damn. That sucks. All right, Raimel Tapia. Good luck to you. Got a chance to drive home Chi-Chi. So I'm surprised Chi-Chi is still hanging around in Colorado. I think he might have been on Texas, actually. So this might be his second stint in Colorado. Damn, Chi-Chi got a rake right there. Boom. Yeah, Trent Grisham did not play that ball very well. Oof. Come on, Musgrove, get her done. Dead air. Yeah, I'm running out of stuff, but we can do more douchey hockey guy at some point. Maybe douchey hockey guy will come back tomorrow to talk about Bruins and Capitals as strike one comes into Raimel Tapia. So maybe douchey hockey guy gets something left in the tank for you late down the road. Oh, did he go around? Yes, he did. Strike two to Raimel Tapia. All right, here we go. 0-2, Musgrove. Get strikeout number 7 and walk us out here on the Take It Easy radio show with some flair and flavor. Here we go. 0-2, pitch on the way from Musgrove. Line to center field. Coming in is going back is Tatis, and he'll make the catch in shallow center field into the shift. And that's it. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in to the Take It Easy radio show. We hope you check us out anywhere and everywhere that you get podcasts for the Take It Easy podcast. But in the meantime, take it easy. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. We'll be right back.